Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you for tuning into Paranormal Talk Radio. This is not the X-Files. We are not scientists. We are not mathematicians. We are certainly not school teachers. We are no experts. We are paranormal investigators who have come together to give our audience insight and educational subjects about the paranormal field. Join us live every Friday night at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time on Blog Talk Radio. Without further delay, here are your hosts, Matthew J. Haas, and his partner in crime, Tim Vickers.
Oh, I gotta love the explosion right there at the end. That's always good. And, well, hello and welcome back to another exciting episode of Paranormal Talk Radio. Gotta say, first thing off tonight, Matt is off. He is doing an investigation and have a really great co-host with me that's filling in for Matt. His name's Steve Brightwell, a professional photographer, has been a professional photographer for many, many, many years. Known him practically all my life, I guess, since kindergarten. And just want to welcome. So say hi, Steve.
Thank you. Hi, Tim. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm psyched to be here. Thanks for having me.
Sure. And as I've known you a long time, haven't I?
It has definitely been since kindergarten. We started out together in kindergarten, and our ways kind of split there in junior high, but we went back to high school together, and goodness.
The power of ghosts brought us back together, Steve.
That's right.
That's the only explanation it could be. Well, Steve, I'm really psyched to have you. And I know for anybody else listening, we have back, Dr. Porterfield, who's a pulmonary doctor, but he specializes and does a lot of work with sleep disorders. And that's always been a really interesting topic for a lot of people. It's about the sleep paralysis. You'll get a chance to meet him, talk with him. He's a person that typically we get some emails about requesting when he's going to be back on. So we were happy that he was able to come back on for us. He's a great guy, a lot of fun, smart individual. Gets me thinking a lot. Makes my brain hurt when we talk about the paranormal. Real insight kind of guy. So I'm really happy he'll be on later on this evening. So, start out our show. Since I actually have a professional photographer on the show with me, Steve, if you would, just go ahead and talk a little bit about yourself and your background in photography.
Alrighty. Well, I went to college, got a degree in photography. You know, that was many moons ago. And, of course, photography has changed so much over the years that I couldn't even describe, you know, the changes. But at the same time, been in this line of work for 25 years and hopefully another 25 in store. I've done just about everything you can imagine, you know, in photography. There are things that I still want to do. A lot of things out there, actually. I, of course, started in the fine art end of the deal. My degree was in fine art photography, and I kind of went backwards. A lot of people start in journalism, and then they, do different things from there, and I kind of started backwards and went in journalism last, and I still do a fair amount of journalism on the side.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had my own business about 11 years.
Yeah.
I'm getting ready to do another chapter. I'm going to be working for the West Virginia Division of Cultural and History as on-site photographer there. So
that's really cool. That's really great too.
Yeah, it's a it's a good gig. So
it's a good gig. I like
as us musicians say.
It's a good gig, you artist people.
Yeah, right.
I like that. Yeah. Well, okay. So, and if I'm not mistaken, were you working towards a master's?
I am. I'm affiliated with the West Virginia Professional Photographers and the Professional Photographers of America, and there's a master's program through that. And of course, it's a growing thing. You can't get it overnight. It's you can be very driven to get a lot of things through the organization, but if you run a business and stuff like that, it's not the easiest thing to do that in a few years. But that's my goal, to get a master's certification with PPA. Mm-hmm. And my certification is a certified professional photographer, and that's the next step actually for me. And the little numbers and the symbols on the card are nice.
Yes,
I don't know if they make any more money, but they certainly, it's a goal for me to do that and grow, through professional photography. It's really good to be in this group. A bunch of them, have started out in ways that I have, in basic ways, and then we see new members come in and they're starting out now, and it's amazing how much talent there is, especially in this state with our group, West Virginia Professional Photographers. And I enjoy all of it.
All right, so I'm writing down here. So if I'm voir direing you in a court of law, this is what I would say. You have 25 years in this field. You've got a Bachelor of Arts degree?
Yeah. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Photography, and working towards your master's, many hours. I would think that would qualify you as an expert in photography.
Well, yeah, maybe so.
Hey, at least enable good enough to give your opinion about some ghost pictures. So
that's right. That's right.
Let's get cracking. Also, just to mention that what I found more interesting was that you taught some forensic photography for
that's
a local
right.
college here for a little while.
I did. It was a period where some of the staff were on a sabbatical, and I was filled in and taught forensic photography 101, I guess, for the forensics program at Mountain State University, which was a former university here.
Yes.
May they rest in peace.
Rest in peace, but no it's coming.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
That's right.
And, well, and the program still exists. Actually, the director took the program to West Virginia Tech, and I just wonder if he'll bring it back here. It would be fantastic. It's Andrew Wheeler.
Mm-hmm.
And I filled in and was adjunct professor for 6 months, and actually learned a lot. When my students were taking the test, I was too. It's not the easiest stuff out there. Photography in general is so different from forensic collecting and all the rules and regulations, and digital being brought in. That was the fascinating thing. This might have changed because this was several years ago, but there are only two states in the nation that recognize digital information as forensic evidence, and that's the biggest port states, Florida and Washington State. And now that might have changed,
mm-hmm.
but those states are so large, they of course can't offer film capability to them, and film is getting less and less you know, out there. I mean, you hear it all the time. Every now and then somebody will revive it and say, oh, films on, you know, people in New York are shooting film. And,
it's the new thing.
It's the new thing. And, you know, it's not that hard, but, you know, it's fading out, friends. It really is. It's on its way out. And,
sure.
You know, some of the big box stores that do photo developing, they're phasing it out. And, you know, when the big chains phase it out completely, you know, it's pretty much gone. But we shot film. We were going to process it by hand, but we were missing a lot of things in the darkroom at that time. These folks were out on leave, and I really just couldn't pull it together. So we shot Ilford, which is a black and white film that can be color processed. And so all my students shot black and white film, and we had a good time, you know, recreating scenes and then setting up scenes where they would stumble up on, and it was really, really interesting.
Okay, well, and I think that would I think in any courtroom I could qualify you as an expert. This is good. This is good. So, Steve. What's that?
I said, "We'll try it."
Oh, yeah, no, you don't. You no court.
No court.
Actually, you might end up. Who knows? So, let me start out. Let me just let me ask this question. When you think about photography, where people do spirit photography or ghost photography, or whatever they have, whatever the flavor name of it is at the time.
The week.
What do you think? What do you think about, what are some accidents? What do you think are, I guess, what would be your opinion would be common mistakes that could lead to false positives that anybody could make?
Well, I think the main thing I've seen out there that's a big mistake or would be something that people might think they have, you know, some sort of evidence, is reflections.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it be from water or, you know, building, trees, you know, anything that can make a reflection. And sometimes things make reflections that you're like, wow, that made a reflection? You know?
Who would have guessed, huh?
Exactly. Like a tree, you know, and you're like, how did a tree do that? But, you know, light is captured different ways. Flash, when used, can, you know, capture some pretty interesting things. But I would imagine that would be the number one thing I would see in the process there. So, yeah.
So just maybe misidentifying reflections.
Right.
Okay.
Right. Uh-huh. Like, for example, I looked at a photo one time that, you know, this person said, wow, there's two eyes, you know, and it, and we really couldn't, you know, if there were glowing eyes. But, and honestly, you know, after I blew the image up and looked at it, and you can't tell, but, I mean, it could have been anything, you know. It really, and it seemed when I did a magnification on it that it was more of a reflection than anything else, the way the light was streaming. And,
yeah. And that's a good point. And you know, something else that I think about is the complexity of the digital cameras today. And, they have, it seems like that you have a greater availability of a lot of bells and whistles for a little bit lower price now as time goes on.
Yes.
So if you could imagine me, and you know me and cameras, right? I'm not a photography expert, I was so happy when, you know, to get you on the team. We're like, we have finally somebody, you know. Okay, so if you could imagine me taking a brand new camera, let's say a $300, $400, $500 camera, all kinds of different adjustments and lenses, what kind of mistakes would you think somebody would make? You know, and you're right, reflections. What about settings? And what kind of settings would you see people make mistakes when they see something and they go, oh, my God, I took this picture of this house and look at this image. It's in the doorway. You know, like what are some setting mistakes do you see?
Oh, yeah, there's tons of setting mistakes, you know. You know, overexposing, underexposing. You know, sometimes people buy a camera and it's like, you know, forget it. I'm just going to put it on program and see what this thing can do. And that's not always the best thing to do either. I mean, you're going to see a numerous amounts of mistakes. And also, it depends on, you know, if they're shooting into the sun,
mm-hmm.
getting flares, shooting into something even at night that's reflecting, using flash completely wrong, or, you know, there's tons of different things they could do, you know, wrong as far as settings. And
I've always seen the cameras with the flashes that can point or rotate. You know, how crazy is that? I mean, I'm sure you know how to, you know, the flashes that look like they can adjust 90 or, you know, about 90 degrees to enable the light to reflect off things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, imagine if you could see me with one of those flashes. The shadows I would catch. Look at this shadow. This shadow looks like somebody taking a picture. That cracked me up. I'm sorry. No, it's a ghost. I know I was taking a picture, but what are the odds?
That's right. I didn't have the flash right at the thing.
That's right.
Pointed it behind me.
That's right.
You know, when you throw flash around like that, you're actually going to have more of a lit up room or area where you are, if it's used correctly. You know, these cameras do have flashes that you can put every which way.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the reason for that is for more availability and not direct flash, or even as they call it, off-camera flash for different things. But I was recently at a photography event, and there was a guy there shooting just to capture the photographers, you know, just a daily, it was a 3-day conference, and there were, you know, this guy was just shooting some random shots, but he had the flash completely straight back, but he would point it, you know, to the left a little bit, his left, and he was hitting the flash on the wall, and it was bouncing back, and it was funny because I was like, wow, I've never done that before,
mm-hmm.
but I could see that it would do, yeah, I knew what it would do, and then later I was shooting an event a couple days later, and I decided to do that just to see, and he had something going there. I mean, yeah, of course, experimentation is a big part of photography,
mm-hmm.
And especially with lighting. But he had something going on there because he was capturing really good skin tones and stuff through his photography, and I did the same when I kind of mimicked what he did. You know, if you know what you're doing, mm-hmm. but there's a lot of people out there that don't, and, you know, they will go get the most expensive camera and the most expensive flash, and you know, there's definitely room for error on many things when you don't know what you're capturing and stuff. And then, you know, my advice is to play around with it and you're not hurting anything. It's not like the film days where it's like you're wasting film. You know, you could, your first 1,000 shots of a camera, you can really try it out and try out lighting and flash and see what it does. And, you know, not only in big spaces, but in small spaces, and crawl around under the house, you know, and take some pictures. Like, no, I'm kidding. But,
I want to find a body, right?
Yeah, yeah. I was thinking that same thing.
Well, Well, that's good. And I think that's really good advice. And I think it's interesting, you know, the number you came up with is just like the first thousand, you know, and that sounds like something, you know, it would take something like that to start to learn what some of those cameras would do.
Right.
And some of the mistakes, you know, that you would make. Well, right. I tell you, I think I got you. The reason why I was doing getting all your background stuff, and the course is very interesting. And before you, you know, before we go, I want you to be able to tell people about your website and where they can go see your work. I think that would be great, and because I think your photography is just awesome.
Well, thank you.
So, with all that background, I want you to think. What's your opinion on? Oh, I'm going to go there. Are you ready?
Oh boy.
Oh yeah, it's going to happen. What's your opinion on orbs?
Orbs.
Oh yes.
I love them. They're awesome.
They are awesome.
Well, we've discussed this before.
Yeah.
And I, you know, my opinion on orbs, people have so many different opinions on orbs, but the first thing you hear is their spirits and their, you know, floating spirits. And honestly, in my opinion, orbs are no more than just moisture in the air. Mm-hmm. And that could be in a house, mm-hmm, or outside or anywhere. And, of course, there are different, I would say, orbs that some are more, you know, dust than they are moisture.
Uh-huh.
But in my professional opinion, I would almost bank on it.
Almost bank on it. Beyond a reasonable doubt.
Beyond a reasonable doubt. You know, there's some kind of moisture going on when you, mm-hmm, pick these things up. It's in it can be in cold weather. Or, you know, people will argue, I'm sure, and say, you know, in cold weather, I picked this up in cold weather. But was the place, you know, that you're in with no electricity, leaky pipes, you know, moisture can happen anytime, damp, cold, or, you know, getting ready to rain outside. Last time I picked some major ones up were I was at a cemetery, family cemetery. It wasn't an investigation or anything. And we were taking some shots, and I got some pretty cool looking orbs, but it was just getting ready to rain. Mm-hmm. So, and
the air was saturated.
And we could feel it. So, you know, in my professional opinion, that is what an orb is. Now, I have people captured orbs, really strange orbs. Yes. I have friends who have captured some very, very interesting orb goings on at the Weston Hospital in or the Trans Allegheny. Is that how?
Yeah, I think that's what it's called now. Yeah, it used to be Weston. Mm-hmm. Now it's Trans Allegheny Lunatic Asylum.
Oh, okay. I think that was the original title, right? Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, and I think we talked about one that was a moth that in the time span of the shutter speed. And correct me if I got that wrong.
No.
The moth was at a full circle.
It did, and it was within a few frames, and we're talking seconds. And the good thing about digital is you can actually calculate how many seconds there was. You know, with film, you can't. But the data on these cameras, you can tell, mm-hmm, and it was a spherical. I mean, it was like a marble. Somebody put a marble in the middle of the room, and it freaked me out, you know. I was like, wow. But, you know, what it was just, you know, a moth, and it was flapping its wings pretty, you know, pretty hard there.
Mm-hmm.
And the way it was positioned, it came out to look completely circular. And then in the next frame, it was just a little further away, and then in the following frame, it was gone, and yeah, a little mystery. I love those things, you know, where people send in, and then stuff that we get from time to time that we, mm-hmm, can look at, and it just makes it a little more interesting.
Yeah, when I get something, I'm I I re, I send back and say, hey, I'm sending this to Steve.
Yeah.
And Steve's going to give you an opinion on that, not me.
Right.
Yeah.
And I've done that several times. I haven't done anything lately.
Well, I kind of hope, or I think maybe it's running its course with, I don't want to say availability is not the right word, but I kind of think, you know, the apps that people use now are getting just too recognizable and kind of easy to pick out. And I think not everybody, but I think a lot of people are starting to figure out that, you know, when they have a party and the next day someone emails them and says, oh man, check this out. You know, at the party, I took this picture and check it out. There's a Civil War soldier in the living room. And they go, we live in Colorado, you know? And you're like, yeah, but you don't know. You don't know what happened. Spirits moved to the, you know, something like that, you know? And
yeah.
People, you used to send those to us. And I kind of think that the gig's up on most of those prank things. But
We had some good ones, but then every now and then we'd have, like, see the lady at the door?
Oh, my gosh.
No.
No.
And it was like, no, look at her hand. Her hand's right here. And it's like, what are you, do I need glasses? Cause I don't see nothing. Yeah. So, but it is neat to, you know, I love to look at that stuff and, I love mm-hmm. to be a part of that. And, you know, sometimes it blows your mind. Like the, Black Mass is a very interesting, you know, specimen. And, my professional opinion is I don't know what it is, you know. It's a neat capture. I've never captured anything like that, but I know our team has in the past. And I think, was it in a couple frames as well? Or just one frame?
I think just one frame. Can't recall. I know the one you're talking about that was real fun to look at. It was real interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, I tell you, I appreciate you talking, Stephen. And I think it'd be fun to get you on as just a straight up guest, not just a co-host here.
Oh, it'd be great.
We got a few more minutes before I'm going to give Dr. Porterfield the go ahead to call on in and talk about you know, sleep paralysis or whatever crosses his mind. Like I said, he's a real smart fella and fun to talk with. But you know, while we're waiting. If you got any, one of the things we like to do on our show at the beginning is our paranormal rants. So if you've got any rants, so get off your chest, Steve. Now's the time, buddy.
And that's, I don't know, what's with the scratches? I haven't seen any scratching lately. Gosh, I think we've discussed, I don't know, the paranormal shows you see on TV where they're
all scratched. Oh, yeah, we do those. Yeah, those are regular. Yeah. Yeah. We've had fun with things as, you know, certifications where you get training to be a ghost hunter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, send me $100 and I'll do a 2-hour online class. And
that's right.
You'll be a certified ghost hunter. You know, those are kind of fun. You know, last week, Matt had brought up a point that I thought was really interesting, that he received an email from a local place where he's from that had said they are going to stop paranormal tours in their facility because of the there was some vandalism and the exaggeration, I believe. Now, I'm not sure if that's right, but the over-exaggeration of the stuff going on, it was hurting their reputation. Cause if I'm not mistaken, they were rather, it was a historic place. And, you know, I mean, the vandalism, I mean, come on. You know?
Mm.
And that's amazing to me that people would vandalize. You know, it doesn't shock me, but
no.
No, it is shocking.
It's heartbreaking, you know, especially in this kind of thing that we like to do. History is the more important thing about our investigations, and it is heartbreaking to see people do that sort of thing, or steal, or, you know, anything from, you know, one of these places that we go.
All right. Well, they, you know, I don't blame them for locking it down.
No, I don't either. You know, I guess, you know, like anything else, it's run its course. Some of this stuff has, you know, where at first there was big, you know, hoopla about things being, you know, paranormal, and then it runs its course.
Tell you what, not to, I see Dr. Portfield's calling in, so I'm going to jump him on the line.
All righty.
Are you ready? Let me see if I can get him here. Hello, Dr. Portfield.
Can you hear me?
Oh, I can hear you, buddy.
Good.
How are you?
I'm doing well, Tim. Good to talk to you again.
Oh, it's great to talk to you. You are a person we get emails about.
I must have
in a positive
way.
I should have added. That was in a positive way. In a positive way.
Oh, okay.
We have had other emails, you know, not to discourage any future guests, but we have, I think we had one guest that was rather intoxicated, and we had to kind of end the interview. But you know what? You live and you learn, right?
That's exactly right.
That's right. How are you doing?
I am doing well, and of course I've been giving some thought today about talking here and some things we could talk about, but we'll go with any questions you have first, or what you think your listeners might be wanting to listen to.
Yeah, well, tell me your thoughts, buddy.
Well,
do
you want to talk sleep, or do you want to talk paranormal stuff in general?
Well, let's go ahead with a little bit of sleep, because I find that people really find that interesting about sleep paralysis. And to kind of give if anybody that hasn't heard Dr. Porterfield in the past, he does a lot of work. He's a pulmonary doctor, but does a lot of work with sleep studies, and does a lot of assessments, does a lot of studies, and works. I don't want to say that you actually work on the brain, but you do a lot of studying about the brain for the research that you do. And
Yeah, go ahead.
That's okay. And I was just going to say there's a lot of I don't want to say big, but there's a large section of the paranormal that talks about sleep paralysis and you know, waking up and seeing for lack of better words, I don't want to say demon, but a lot of people say there were demons, and sometimes you hear demons and animals in the room, and they can't move. And
right.
I think, you know, they're awake. They see things around them, but they also see the other things, and it's very terrifying for them.
Right.
A lot of people interpret that as a paranormal event.
I think that's where sleep medicine intersects paranormal studies at that level. Of course, we study a lot of other things with sleep disorders, but that particular one is, I think, gets confused a lot with paranormal activity. And I want to preface this by saying that certainly it's possible that paranormal activity could be taking place. I don't want to come off as saying that it never happens. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying
right.
that one needs to probably take this stuff with a grain of salt a little bit when it happens upon awakening or during sleep. And as we talked about before, for anyone that wasn't listening before, there is a condition called sleep paralysis that most people, well, I shouldn't say that, about half the people
mm-hmm.
will experience at some point in their life. And some people experience it quite frequently. But what this involves, it involves someone awakening and being completely awake but being totally paralyzed and unable to move. And it basically scares the witches right off of whoever it happens to. They get really concerned. They call their doctor. They run to the hospital. They do things like that. And basically what this is it's a carryover of REM sleep. During REM sleep is when we dream. And during that time, the body becomes totally paralyzed. There's a center in the brain that completely paralyzes the the muscles in the body except for the diaphragm and the eyes. That's why the eyes move. Now, why the eyes are spared, nobody knows. But the diaphragm being spared is obvious because you have to breathe while you're sleeping. But but what happens then is that as the person wakes up, this center does not release the paralysis state on time or on cue. So that remains active for a few seconds or even a minute or two. And the person is totally awake, is aware of what's going on in the room, and unable to move. Now, also what can happen is the dream state can carry over and superimpose itself upon reality, where the person has an actual dream and they see this as taking place in the room. And generally it involves a threat. If you think about most of the dreams you have, most dreams are not really pleasant. Most dreams involve an anxiety of some sort. You know, things are not functioning correctly. This isn't going right. Problems occur in dreams. So dreams tend to be negative experiences for most people. At least most dreams are negative experiences. And the animal or the person is a threat in the room. And I think I told you before that we had one lady who actually sold her house because she thought she saw a snake rise up and look at her while she was sleeping beside her bed. And she was never able to find the snake, so she sold her house and moved. And then later was diagnosed as having a condition called narcolepsy, in which that occurs fairly frequently. And we explained her situation based on that. But, I mean, that was a rather major reaction to that problem. It's just to sell your house. That's exactly what she did. And
yeah.
So when someone says they wake up and there's something in the room, that may be not paranormal. It may be actually medical, or it may be very benign. As I said, this can happen once or twice to anybody, and it's not. It has no clinical or medical significance. If that's all that happens, there are medications that can treat it, but you don't want to take those unless this becomes a real problem for you and occurs over and over again. Which with some people it will do that. And that could be cured with medication that suppress REM sleep. These medications have really no effect on how the person feels the next day. Most of them are actually antidepressants. Most of the antidepressants will decrease REM sleep as part of their side effect profile, and we use the medication for that side effect, not for the primary use of being antidepressant. And generally it's very effective. But it can be scary. And narcolepsy, which I'll touch on briefly, is a lot less frequent. Some people have that. It results in sleepiness during the day and having difficulty maintaining sleep during the night. And sleep paralysis and seeing things, having dreams during wakefulness, seeing images that you superimpose on reality, is more common among that group. And that group usually does require some sort of treatment. They're bad enough that they generally require these medications to control their condition, but it is treatable. So that's the thing to remember is that if you have these conditions or have the situation occur over and over again, you may want to report this to a sleep physician or someone who has experience with sleep disorders and see if you want to try one of these medicines to see if this helps that condition. Now, most doctors who do this, well, I shouldn't say well, that easy, not most, but a lot of physicians, if you go in there and report that you're doing this, we'll send you off to the psychiatrist. They think you're nuts, and that happens. So I'd emphasize that talk to a doctor who has experience in sleep medicine or sleep disorders, because you're more likely to get diagnosed appropriately that direction than going to a family physician or another type of physician.
That's a good point, buddy. I didn't even think about that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that, I can really see that happening. If you go to your physician and say, I wake up with demons in my room, I can see a referral just to do a quick check and not maybe see. But you're right. That's an excellent point. Go to someone that has expertise in sleep.
Yes, because you could very easily get diagnosed as having some sort of psychiatric disorder on the spot when actually you don't. You have a very medical disorder that's very explainable chemically.
Well, some of the emails I got about this was more discussion about the history of sleep paralysis. And of course, I know, you know, we can't say it's paranormal or not paranormal, but with that aside, you know, they have things called a succubus and an incubus,
right,
which, are apparently, we'll just say, beings that attack or have their way with you at night. We'll put it that way.
Right.
And they're actually, they're very quiet. They're very popular. I don't think, nobody was implying that that's the cause, but it was a very interesting thing to look at the timeline, when these things were coming around. Of course, this was going on for, longer than what, a lot of current scientific studies do with sleep. And, when you have this type of situation, I could only imagine waking up and not being able to move, even if there was nothing in front of you, and you are, let's say you're a person from the 1700s, what other explanation do you have at that time? Then there must be something sitting on your chest.
Mm-hmm. Now, and again, that could also be explained by REM sleep, and I'm going to get just a touch graphic here, so if any kids are around, you may want to scoot them out of the room for a minute. But
Let me see if we did a... I think, I don't know what we rated it, but we gave a heads up. So get the kids out. Turn it down.
All right, this is not all that bad. But during REM sleep also, as all men will know, is when you have erections. That happens during REM sleep spontaneously. And with the female, you have vaginal lubrication happens spontaneously. Uh-huh. So those are just functions of REM sleep. And it's felt that what that does is that maintains that equipment for use. Is it actually creates a condition that, like how you start your engine in your car every so often to keep it running well, if you have it sitting for a long time, that's what REM sleep does. It keeps that equipment functioning well. Now,
really?
Now, I did not know that.
That is actually fascinating.
It is. And it's not too far of a step to take that into the realm of where that stage of REM sleep is also remaining active as the person is awake. They would superimpose an image over that process going on. So, there you have that. That's a possibility. And that, to me, that makes the most sense medically as to what's going on. The person superimposes an image in a dreamlike state over what's already happening to them from a physiological standpoint. People often do incorporate elements of the environment into their dreams. I'm sure most people have the experience of hearing something in their dream that actually was occurring in the real world and waking and realizing that what was going on in their dream was actually happening in the real world, a sound of some sort, generally what that is.
Yes.
And, it wouldn't be at all unusual to have this sort of image that would be incorporating what is going on with you, and it would be a dream that's being incorporated into what's actually taking place bodily in you. So I think that's something to think about.
Well, that was I never knew that, buddy. That makes sense. This is why I love hanging out with you. Because the succubus was believed to be a female imp, demon, being, and an incubus was the male. And the history of it was incubuses would come and seduce the women at night, and succubuses would seduce the men at night. And it's about you have the reoccurring, I awoke to found this person performing acts. We'll keep it at that. And and I couldn't move. And fascinating, very interesting. And probably at the time, when you think about it when you think about it in relation to the time that they were in, it would make sense. It would be a way to make sense of their environment.
Right.
When they don't know what else is going on.
Right.
Yeah, that's good.
Go ahead.
Uh-huh.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. I didn't want to interrupt.
I was going to say, I will throw in, and I had forgotten to say this earlier, about the state of paralysis. If anybody experiences this, usually what terminates it is someone yells or touches you. that kind of physical stimulus can terminate the paralysis. So mm-hmm. that's just something else to keep in mind. If you wake up and find yourself lying there paralyzed, just hang on. It'll terminate. just don't get excited about it. But that usually is what does it, is the spouse yells at you, or a loud sound occurs outside, or your bed partner touches you or shakes you, and that terminates the experience. So I just want to get that in before I forgot it.
Wow, that's good stuff, buddy. For some reason, I'll just throw this out there, because of the external stimuli finding its way inside your dreams. You know, a very vivid dream that I can remember having was I was in the backyard of my house growing up, and this is when I was younger and in high school, and I found myself carrying my alarm clock, and the alarm clock was going off. It was beeping, and no matter where I would go in my backyard, it was plugged into this everlasting extension cord into my house. And it was just it was frustrating. And if I put it down, it ended up back in my hands. And if I tried to turn it off, it wouldn't turn off. And then finally, my mom came in my bedroom, and she said, she woke me up, and she said, "Are you going to get up and turn off that daggone, alarm?" And that was very interesting to me back then. And the everlasting extension cord was something else. You hit that right on there for me.
Right. So what you did was you incorporated something in the environment into your dream. And it's not a stretch to look at the reverse, that you incorporate a dream, something into your environment when you're awake.
Uh-huh.
And REM sleep is ongoing. So
that's really good. Mm-hmm. That's a good point. Oh, okay. The other one that I've seen from an email is about, and you kind of talked on this a little bit, because we had someone in the chat room that night that was very interested in UFOs, and that was, the feeling of being abducted or having interaction with an alien. And again, not saying it does or doesn't happen, not placing a value of correct or incorrect or positive or not positive, but just some other other options. But it had to do with narcolepsy. And I thought it was a really good question about if you have narcolepsy and you do fall asleep wherever you are, can you have that REM type of sleep where you would partly wake up and see beings around you?
Yes, that is always possible. As a matter of fact, one criteria we use to diagnose narcolepsy is to use what's called a multiple sleep latency test, where we have the person try to take naps during the day, and we measure by brainwave activity how long it takes them to fall asleep, and do they dream. A normal person will not dream during daytime naps. A narcoleptic patient generally will. So if they have more than two dreams during the daytime naps and they're sleepy to a certain degree, that's very diagnostic of narcolepsy. So the answer to that is yes, they can dream at any point during the nap, and usually that's one of the criteria we use to diagnose the condition. So yes, it's a short answer.
Again, it's not placing a value on if or something did or didn't happen, but just it's an interesting possibility of something else to look at.
Again, it's the intersection of the paranormal and sleep apnea and sleep medicine and this kind of thing. There are other paranormal avenues which I think have credibility, and this one may to some degree. But I've always wondered, why does this happen when people go to sleep? Like, do UFOs just come when you're sleeping? Do they not ever abduct you during the day? Are aliens unable to anesthetize you during the day and do whatever they want? I don't know. It's just a question which logically, you follow that logic and you wonder why always after you go to sleep. What's the deal with that? And it makes more sense to say, is that a sleep disorder manifesting itself by nocturnal visualizations or visions that will be manufactured by the patients entering a REM sleep stage?
Well, you know, if you've ever gone out collecting frogs, the best way to do it is at night with the flashlight, you know, so they just stare at the flashlight. maybe the aliens just wait for us to sleep and, sorry, and they know we'll be stunned by a big bright light staring us in the eye just long enough to scoop us up.
Well, I've never made a connection between aliens and frogs, so I'll let you go on with that one.
I'll set that up. I'll do an experiment. I'm kind of hogging all the time, but you know, this evening we have Steve Brightwell. Matt's actually doing an investigation tonight in, I don't know, I think it's Pennsylvania, but it might be New York. So, buddy, this is Steve. Steve is, I don't know if you guys have met, Steve's our photographer on our team. So, Steve, if you have any questions or anything, feel free to fire away.
Can you hear me? Sorry,
yeah, sure.
I had a little mic difficulty there. I have a question, and not really a question, but kind of an insight. I had a dream this morning, and I don't even remember what it was when I woke up, but it was a nightmare, and I woke up at like 5 this morning, and it was so bad, whatever it was, that I was just like, oh, there's just no way I'm going back to sleep. But yet I couldn't remember what it was. And it was, but, you know, I haven't had one that, you know, kind of like stirring where it's like, I'm not going back to sleep ever again.
Well, how mental am I? Yeah, well, not. Here's what you have to look at. 5-6 o'clock in the morning is when you do your most dreaming. REM sleep occurs in the adult about every 90 minutes. In the child, it's closer. It's about 60 minutes in the child. But about 90 minutes on the mark, you have a dream, and you have a REM phase, and the REM phases become progressively longer during the night. Your brain gives preference to deep, called synchronized sleep, where the brainwave pattern are slow down early in the night, and it gives less preference to REM. And then as the night goes on, the so-called slow-wave sleep decreases, and the REM sleep increases in duration, so that most of the dreaming that you remember will occur at 4:30 to 5:30 in that time frame. So that's your classic time when you're dreaming. As a matter of fact, most people tend to have heart attacks that part of the night, or if they have some medical issue that involves low oxygen, sometimes it will occur then. Because if they have sleep apnea, that's when they relax the most during REM sleep, and it's 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning when they really go into a REM sleep phase, and they become hypoxemic, they have low oxygen, and that's really an effect on their heart and other organs. But that being said, dreams also run a spectrum of very quiet and benign dreams to very intense emotional dreams. And the intense emotional stuff usually is not associated with a dream. It's usually not a visual experience, it's an emotional experience. So, and as I said earlier, dreams tend to be negative, and that's a prime example right there, is that was a negative experience. Dreams tend to be a manifestation of your daytime anxieties. That's one of the reasons people try to do dream analysis, to try to analyze what exactly the person is dreaming of. I know that, of course, classically, Freud tried to relate this back to sexuality quite a bit, and I think it does play a role, but I think most of the more recent dream investigators have sort of de-emphasized that and emphasized other anxieties which can occur also. But it makes perfect sense it would be that time of the night, and a strong emotion usually is not associated with a visual experience unless it's a very short, intense experience like being attacked by an animal or something like that. But it's just it's a dream experience. If it occurs every, you know, often to the point where it's a problem for you, again, there are medications that will decrease REM sleep. But as long as you're only experiencing just that and no other ill effects, it probably doesn't even require any attention.
Yeah, no, it's just been a one-time thing here, but it was a pretty. It's weird that, you know, I knew I didn't want to go back to sleep, but yet I couldn't I couldn't remember anything from what I had dream-wise.
Uh-huh.
Thank you. Thanks very much.
No problem.
You
no
put
problem.
It in perspective because the timeline is perfect because it was just right at 5. And, you know, I would imagine some of that has to do with, you know, not getting enough sleep, too, in general. When you, what is your thoughts on that?
Yes, I'm glad you made that point. It very well does. If you have a sleep loss, REM sleep then gets increased on the subsequent night. And generally, it's the second night. If you have extreme sleep loss, it generally takes 2 nights to catch up. The first night, you emphasize slow-wave sleep, and the second night, you emphasize REM. So a lot of people will you know, be able to identify with that, and what will happen is that if they're really sleep-deprived, they sleep well one night, they actually feel kind of bad the next day. They have to sleep 2 days to feel a lot better, and that's why they don't really recoup all phases of sleep for 2 nights. And so if that was your second night of good sleep, that would, you know, even be important, although it wouldn't have to be. I mean, you could be recouping that the first night as well, but it tends to emphasize REM sleep on your second night of sleep of recuperation. But it's just interesting. I mean, you know, I'm sure we all have dreams too. I had one the other night that I woke up and wasn't sure if it was real or not. It took me a few minutes to realize it wasn't real, and suffice to say, I was very relieved that it wasn't real.
Oh, those are the worst dreams ever. I hate the dream that. Of course, it's a great feeling when you finally go, oh, you know, it's not real. But
yes.
I hate those. I hate those.
And those again are just our high emotional experiences, which can occur from time to time.
All right. Well, I think those were some talking points that people had emailed me about. When you come back on to kind of like talk about them and think what your thoughts on. And, you know, I tell people all the time, just email me if they have any questions and I can forward that on to you.
Okay.
And again, for now, if anybody has any questions, it's just talking points. And, you know, I give you a lot of credit for your discussion abilities, buddy. You're just really good, thought-provoking. Love having discussions with you. So I can pass them on and let you answer some questions.
Okay.
So when you came on, you had some. Did you have some ideas of something else to talk about?
Well, I've been thinking about this today, and this is something that's bothered me, Tim. And I just want to throw it out there for your listeners to consider, for you to consider also. You know, I mean, I think back to the experience you had, and that experience has never really made me completely comfortable with the implications. When your daughter Keegan had the experience of seeing a little girl in the house, playing with a little girl in the house, or wanting to, and then you recording the second trip, recording a little girl's voice saying Keegan is here.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, you know, a lot of the show, I mean, I listened to part of your earlier show here, and of course, we have put dampers on things, and I think that's good because a lot of this field does seem to have dampers put on it because it gets a little ridiculous from time to time trying to make paranormal out of things that aren't. But here's a case where I think you can make paranormal out of something that it definitely is. And I think these experiences do exist. You've had them. I've had a few that I've not really talked about either, but we could at some other time, like or tonight. But I want to throw this out here. You know, we discussed earlier that I put this idea you and I have talked about, like why can kids see these things and adults cannot? And interfacing with sleep medicine, there is a process where the brain operates on inhibition. We discussed earlier that when the brain wants to initiate sleep, it doesn't activate sleep cells. It withdraws inhibition on those cells. So the cells become active on their own. So things in the brain are being actively inhibited as opposed to being activated spontaneously. Okay? Now, you know, and I had this idea that, well, a child has a less developed brain. An adult has a more developed brain. So is the adult developing an inhibition against seeing whatever this is? Because, I mean, there's the fact. She could see this little girl and you couldn't. Okay, and she could still describe this little girl.
She did.
Not only that, you record the little girl's voice on a recorder.
We did.
Okay, those are all facts we can deal with, okay? The little girl spoke English.
Using her name.
Yes. Little girl.
Yeah.
The little girl spoke English. And I can't really say it's a little girl. Whatever it was. Let's just start with
yes.
that. Whatever it was, spoke English with no accent on the recorder, knew her name, appeared to be happy. And okay, and now I think about that, and you ask myself, why? I'm going to assume something was there, number one. The facts are, number one, something was there. We don't know what, but an entity was there. The entity spoke English, was happy, and interacted with your daughter. Your daughter see the entity, okay, and
she did.
And actively interact with it.
Yes.
Okay, now, why cannot adults do that? It doesn't make any sense. If you believe in, okay, let's just say you believe in evolution. Why would evolution develop an inhibition of seeing that? What possible evolutionary benefit could that hold? I mean, did people that could do that die before they could reproduce, and that's what killed the gene out? I don't know, but it doesn't make any sense why you would develop an inability to see those entities. Okay? Now, that's the first thing I want to throw out there. What is the purpose for being unable to see them? And how would evolution bring that about? What possible selection pressure could be applied to make that happen? Now, that also implies that if it is genetic, that adults may be able to see them. And I have no personal experience with this, but I have read stories where people say that, yeah, they know people that say they can still see ghosts, but these people won't say anything because they get diagnosed with psychiatric disorders.
Yeah.
And maybe they can. Okay, I have become a lot less quick to diagnose psychiatric disorders than people that say that. I'm not a psychiatrist, but I listen closer now. So I would just want to throw out there why can adults not see them? And I'm going to throw this out, and your listeners can bet this around. Is that an argument for the existence of God? Okay. You know, it says we're not supposed to interact with the dead. We don't know what this is. We don't know if it was a dead person or not. We really don't know. You know, you have an EVP that lists, or that's where the person or the demon, whatever it is, says it's called a demon. Okay, you have an EVP where the word demon is being used by an entity. Okay. That's always bothered me, too. I think that's a remarkable EVP, because I don't know of any other EVP that has that. I've never heard that before.
And, you know, I just want to say that the house where we get – there's only – we've been doing this 14, 15 years, and it's one house. If you could imagine – and I kind of think, to put it on a perspective, kind of how I feel about where – we'll just say the paranormal community goes sometimes, like we were saying, sometimes it's just really a need to stop the craziness, because the craziness drowns out the amazing.
Yes. Yes.
So of
I agree.
All the places, of all the places, it's one house, it's one place.
Right.
And I just want to say that house is for sale.
You can still get it.
You can still get it.
It's still on the market. I talked to the lady yesterday. So.
It's a late 18th century Victorian house, too. So I'm just saying, anybody interested in something like that, you know, feel free to email me, because she's wanting to sell it. She had experiences. The previous owner called me at least twice in the night, you know, telling me, you know, something had happened.
Yeah, is that house empty?
No,
it's rented out. It's rented out right now.
Okay.
Yeah. I would like to actually talk to the renters and see what they say.
Yeah. You know my experience from the first time we met at that house, Tim.
Yeah, took some good photos there. And he was there, I don't know how long, 30 minutes, and your first experience happened there.
Uh-huh.
Yes, and you know,
it doesn't take long.
It wasn't like, hey, meet us at this haunted house either. It was like, I knew you, but we were meeting up, and we were just going to have just a little powwow get together, and it was at this place in Fayetteville. I mean, I didn't go into it going, ooh, what am I going to find in this place? Of course, when I walked in the front door, I was like, wow, this is a cool place. But right after that, mm-hmm. You know, I did experience something, and there are some issues with that house. I mean, and all the evidence we've collected and what you guys have collected even before I came on, it's just amazing. One house, like you said, is just
I don't mean to interrupt you, but along those lines, I think, I mean, that's not the only house. Is another point I like to think about. Is I know that there's others, but I think they're more few than they are greater.
Mm-hmm.
So, but with that said, I just, since we were talking about that and the things that you were mentioning that you have, and I gotta say, buddy, and Dr. Portfield, I call him buddy.
Oh, buddy's fine.
He goes by buddy. Yeah. That's for people who don't know how well I know you. they're like, this guy keeps calling a doctor buddy. Like he's, yeah.
We go back a long way.
We go back a long ways. You've beat me up a lot.
Well, vice versa.
Into submission. Yeah. I lost my train of thought. It's okay. I don't want to get away. I just wanted to mention.
You're talking about houses and houses.
I just wanted to mention that this is one place where all this activity happens. And when I get to my, and sometimes I get disillusioned, I guess is a good word about, you know, what exactly is there. And when I come back to some of that data I have from that house and that, like you said, the whatever it was singing to my daughter, you know, I can't explain it, so it brings it back to
me. And I've always been just kind of asked the question, why can we not see them? Why are mm-hmm. adults not seeing that? I cannot imagine an evolutionary pressure which would do that. You know, that would require people to get killed or die before they could reproduce as a selection pressure. That's what selection pressure is on a gene. So mm-hmm. I don't see how that would happen. How that would, I can't in my mind fathom a reason for that. So that's why I'm saying, so why? Why can't we see them?
Something I want to add to that I think is really important where we've had this conversation, and for anybody else that's listening or you know, it. I have two things. So the first thing is I think it's interesting if you think about it on a evolutionary scale that it starts with the ability in the young, and then, like you said, whatever it is gets suppressed.
Mm-hmm.
But when you near a point that you talk about that I thought was fascinating is when you near end of life.
Right.
And I mean, not like me, but like when you're really at the end,
sort of,
I guess.
Sort of senile, or start losing your faculties,
Yeah. Is that, does that inhibition release? Because I know you as a doctor, and I don't know specifics, and I understand that, so, but out of respect. But just in general, you know, me with some family member, members that we've been, you know, around,
mm-hmm.
As a child, I remember my grandmother speaking of different people. You know, she had pancreatic cancer, and I'm okay talking about my grandma.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what she passed from. But at the end, she would talk about different family member coming to visit her.
Yes.
And she was a very conservative person. There was no nonsense with my grandma.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I mean, she whipped with the best of them if I got any nonsense going on. And that was very foreign to me to listen to her when we'd go to the hospital and she would talk about my grandfather. And my grandfather would come in and would say, hey, it's going to be fine. I'm here to go with you. That was one of the things that she would say. And
well,
she was like just at total peace.
Yes. And you know, and we write that off as whether seeing on or seeing things. But we don't write kids seeing things off when we have voices on the recorder. You know, so why not?
Uh-huh.
I mean, it seems to me it's a double standard. Okay? If
mm-hmm.
you're going to say that a kid can see them, then you need to be saying the adult maybe can see them too if their brains are deteriorating as death approaches. Do they reacquire the ability to see those entities, whatever they are? And we really don't know. We don't know whether they're deceased people or what they are. They say they see deceased people. But really, we don't have, you really can't lay that as an actual fact, a knowable fact, like you can what we've already discussed. It's something, but it is something. And, yes, I do tend to pay more attention to that now, and I've heard other stories of people saying the same thing. When they're near death, they start seeing people in the room, or they start seeing family members in the room talking to them. And I don't discount that anymore.
Right. And I wonder if that has anything to do with what you're talking about with the function of the brain, where you have inhibitors and releasing of inhibition.
Right.
Just because you have a brain that's functioning might be, I'm no doctor, so I'm just throwing this out there as thought. You might have a similar, whatever part of the brain that controls that.
Right.
While it's developing, you might have some development and it's still under construction. And then while you're at the end of death, it's deteriorating. So you might have similar functioning parts of the brain at a very young age.
And again, back to this other question, which really has troubled me, is the body in general does not expend energy to build something that doesn't need. Okay, so why does it develop the need, or the ability rather, to not see, or why is it not able to see these entities? It actually develops a process whereby it blocks it. Now, what possible use could that have? I mean, I can't see the use of that from an evolutionary viewpoint. Okay, I mean, I could explain that better if I think about this. Okay. Is that a process God instilled to keep the two groups separated, to keep the two worlds separated? I don't know. I'm throwing this out for your, give me some feedback if that sounds stupid. Tell me where my mind lies. But I can't, to me, that's easier to comprehend than why evolution would do that. I don't get it. So there you
maybe
have it.
Maybe the entities don't want to be seen, and I'll throw out an example. When my mom, on this eve of Mother's Day weekend, my mom passed away from pancreatic cancer as well. And not on this eve, but I mean, while we're talking about moms and grandmothers. And she said that she'd seen someone in her room when she passed, and everything was going to be okay. Now, this was probably about a week before she passed away. And I will tell you that the day she died at UVA, my dad and I were walking out of UVA, and this woman said, she called her last names, Mr. Brightwell, are you Mr. Brightwell? And we turned around, and the lady said, are you James Brightwell? Looked right at my dad, and my dad said, yes. And she said, are you Steve Brightwell? And I said, yes. And she said, I just wanted you to know. Excuse me, this is kind of hard to talk about.
I'm sorry, Steve.
That's all right, man. This is right where we're talking about, so I have to kind of talk about this.
Sure.
She said that my mom's in a better place and don't worry about anything. And she said, I know you have a long drive ahead of you, and, I just want you to know that God's got it. And we were, floored. And, those words helped on the way home. And I got the lady's name, and we were going to send her flowers, because she was just, that was so nice. And, what are the odds that she would know what we look like? We'd never met her before.
Right.
Well, we tracked her down to the hospital, and they didn't have anybody working there by her name. And she had a name tag. She had, all the hospital attire on. And she said she worked on mom's floor, and the hospital said she didn't.
Isn't that wild?
It was bizarre. It was bizarre. So my point is maybe we're not ready to see them. And in certain instances where they think we're ready, they appear.
Okay, now I'm going to counter that notion with this question. You know, there was a place there where Tim could not see this entity and her and his child could at the same point. Okay?
Yes.
They're in the same room looking at the same spot. One can see and one cannot. That implies to me a difference in the brain of the recipient. I don't know how the entity could control one person seeing them and one person not, and especially knowing that kids in general can see them. It's not just her, it's kids in general. That, to me, that implies why would they select themselves to be seen for children, or how could they do that? I'm not saying they could not, but to me, it's a stretch of the imagination. It's easier
in the
me,
movies. It's,
yeah,
I'm sorry, go ahead.
But it's easier for me to place the difference on the brain of the recipient, which actually you can see there it is. A child is a child, an adult is an adult. They have different brain developments, as opposed
right.
to something that the entity is doing. To selectively make people see them or not see them. Because I don't know if anybody or any time when one adult saw them in a room and another adult did not, and it was that plain. Usually it involves different ages. It involves either very old or very young and a normal adult with normal brain development. So I'm going to throw that at you. And I think that entity probably, if that was the entity that you saw, and I've heard that before, believe me, I've heard stories like this before too, that entity wanted both of you to see her. She didn't appear to one and not the other. She maybe did not. I don't know whether she could have done that. She had to either see her or not see her as an adult. So, again, to me, it has more to do with the brain of the recipient. To me, that makes more logical sense as best as I can explain it. Now, I'm not saying I'm definitely sure I'm right. To me, that's the preponderance of evidence where that actually points. But I've heard those stories before. You aren't the first person to tell me a story like that.
I'm the first person?
No, you are not the first person to tell me a story
okay.
like that.
Okay.
No, you are not. We have a hospice house here in Beckley. And Tim may be aware of this, you may too, but there are two entities associated with this hospice house that many people have seen. And one is a tall African-American man that's well-dressed that frequently is seen when people are going to hospice. He'll appear in the room with the family and tell them that they're going to get some good news about their family member going to hospice, and they usually do right after that, and no one knows who he is. He's not associated with hospice. He's not associated with the hospital, but he's been seen multiple times. Different people have described him. There also is a little girl that has been seen at the hospice house by numerous people, including some of the staff. The staff have seen her. The patients have seen her. They've all described the same little girl. Some of the people who are on their deathbed and close to dying have described seeing this little girl playing in their room. Or they'll ask who that little girl belongs to, that their parents are probably looking for them. So this also is, you know, going on there. And they're well aware of this. Some of the staff wants to see her. I had to talk to a nurse the other day that had not seen this girl, but she was quite aware of her, and she was hoping she would eventually see her. So, yeah, I mean, these things exist. And to be honest with you, of course, I'm running my mouth thinking all the time, but to be honest with you, this sort of thing changed my worldview. When I was younger, I was all science. Tim can tell you. It was science, science, science. Science explained everything. I didn't want to hear it. I didn't believe it. And these sorts of things, I had to change the way I view reality based on some of these facts because they're indisputable. I mean, you had an experience right there that you can't explain on a logical explanation, and so have I. I've heard some others like that. So what do you do with that? I mean, that doesn't fit into a totally scientific worldview. You have to make some accommodations for other types of events going on rather than just all being explained by neural impulses or what have you, in my opinion.
Right.
So I'll throw that out.
You got to reconcile it somehow.
Yes, yes. How do you reconcile that information with reality?
That's the Keegan song is really a hook for me. That whole house is a hook for me.
Yeah, that was a major experience, I think, and that was a really good paranormal experience to have documented. There's a lot of information to be extracted from that, things that happened and things that didn't happen. Sometimes things that don't happen can be as informative as some of the things that do happen. And, you know, you're not being able to see this entity and and she was able to see it as one of the things I think you extract information from is to try to question why. And that's what I've done with that. Why? Why can't we see them? What is the advantage of that? Why have our brains developed that characteristic? Because they have, for some reason. And why? There it is. Your listeners can chew on that.
It's a great question, and why is always a great question.
Right.
It's a tough question sometimes. Sometimes it's the hardest daggone question. And then sometimes we're looking for stuff, and like in the past we've gone to very historical houses and had investigations and absolutely had not one thing from the investigation.
Mm-hmm.
But then the small house down the road that has no historical significance whatsoever could, you know, be a like the one we did in Fayette County. One of my first experiences there, Tim, with you guys.
Yeah.
And we had just a plethora of EVPs and noises and wow, you know.
Yeah.
So,
why?
Why?
Yeah.
Good question. I don't know. So we move forward. That's what we do, don't we?
That's right.
We just keep getting. If we can't get the answer, that we can just keep collecting data, and somebody sometime in the future will have the answer, and they can just use ours.
Well, I believe it's really interesting to take the facts you have and try to extrapolate what you can from those facts, and make theories based on your best available information, which is what we always do. We've done that for centuries now, and I don't see why we should stop now. I think what we're doing here is a good thing.
Absolutely. All right. Well, buddy, I hate to tell you, I'm having a good time, but I'm running out of time.
Well, that happens to us, too, eventually. It happens to us all, eventually.
Yeah, eventually the big clock runs out, and then I guess all answers are there before us.
Let's
but I want
so.
To thank you again for coming on.
Oh, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you. I enjoyed listening to you. Yeah, it's always just one of the best conversations, and you know that the whole evolutionary standpoint. If that's even a way to go, it's just another way to think about it.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I think as far as the evolution goes, you know, my mind goes straight to, well, if it was something that was needed to be stomped out, it looks like it would be stomped out. But it looks like it survives in youth, or at least young age. But then,
And my question is, why is it there in the first place? Why do we even need it?
It must serve something in the youth, in early childhood.
It serves a purpose somewhere, but what's the purpose? You know, and I just can't imagine an evolutionary reason for that to exist. So that's just something I'll leave your viewer or your listeners to chew on. Is that question. Why?
That's good. That's good, buddy. Well, I want to thank you. And I just want to say, if anybody has any questions or thoughts, feel free to email them to paranormaltalkradio@gmail.com. Or if you know me, you can just email them to me. I'll pass them on, and maybe we'll get Buddy back on in the future to answer some more questions. If that's okay.
Very good, Tim. I appreciate it. I've enjoyed it.
Oh, thank you, buddy. And I appreciate you coming on.
Okay. Take care.
All right. Have Bye-bye. A good night. Bye-bye. Wow, he's interesting. He's a smart guy. I'm telling you.
Mm-hmm.
We can sit around and just have the best conversation. And I met him, and he is a doctor, but he goes by Buddy, so when people hear me call him Buddy, I'm not being disrespectful to a doctor.
I was kind of wondering about that at first, but then I was, yeah.
Yeah, it sounds like, hey, buddy, what are you saying? but he goes by Buddy, and, I met him a long time ago. We did a lot of work early on in some martial arts classes. And had a lot of fun, and that's where my comment, he used to beat me up a lot. And then
I heard about that too.
And then that place closed, and then Buddy started an Aikido group, which is another martial art, another form of martial art, which he loves.
and he talked me into joining, and we studied together there for many years. And he, you know, he wouldn't beat me up so bad, but he would make me pound on the mat in submission, tap out. But a lot of fun, really good guy, really smart guy, and you know, even as far back as, you know, 20 years ago when we first started, you know, we would just have those conversations. And you know, I love being around people that make me question myself and my thoughts and my beliefs. And you know, he's one of those people.
Yes, he certainly is.
Yeah. I hadn't even thought about any evolutionary advantage. I mean, is there? I mean, that's a great question.
Right.
I'm going to ask that question on our Facebook. I mean, is there an evolutionary advantage to seeing ghosts or seeing spirits, or is there not? Or if there is, what could it be? I don't know. To be honest with you, like the thing that I would say, and it's completely very generic, because it's about the best that I can come up with when I think about evolutionary benefits of brain functioning versus non-brain functioning, because you know, I'm not at that big a skill level. But I said
our brain would hurt after we talked to him.
Yeah, I could only imagine 9,000-10,000 years ago. If that part of the brain hasn't been inhibited yet, that you would see everybody, you know, or probably mostly everybody that died, and everybody that hasn't, and I would imagine there would be confusion as to why some people couldn't hunt, some people couldn't gather, some people couldn't help with shelter, you know.
Right.
It would look like, I don't know, and that's completely generic. I could almost see why it would be important to lose contact with that. I mean, what do you think about that? Is that crazy?
That is crazy.
That is crazy. Yeah, but I throw it out there. What the heck? I am not scared of sounding dumb, because I'm very used to it.
You're the smartest person I know.
Yeah, well, that's scary.
Absolutely, you're.
That's scary.
Your insights really are. You get people thinking too, and especially on our website, and you know, just your general posts. So, yeah. Well, he's very impressive. Very, very impressive.
He is. I throw it out there. I keep telling him he needs to buy that house.
Yeah.
and give me a key so I can make a lab.
That's true. Yeah, that's a nice little find there, that house. Wow.
Yeah. Well, and right. If anybody wants a lab in beautiful southern West Virginia.
Right.
Yeah, give me a call. I cannot neither confirm nor deny the existence or non-existence of any spirits there. So there's no guarantee of the sale.
That's true. Yeah, they'll probably just it'll be a very quiet house for the sale.
That would probably be my luck. Yeah. Well, Steve,
I think it depends on the person, really. You know what I'm saying? I mean,
mm-hmm.
Oh well, that's another topic.
Yeah. I want to say I appreciate you coming on and co-hosting with me, not leaving me on my own. That was great.
Thanks for having me.
I love your insight into the professional photography side of it.
Yes.
I think there's a lot to learn there. And, you know, my thoughts on paranormal and collection of paranormal evidence or said collection of said paranormal evidence is, you know, I think and I really feel that you can collect things that are very, very, very strange and very odd. It doesn't make it a ghost, or it doesn't make it a spirit. It just really makes it tough to explain. To me, it makes it very interesting.
Right.
However, I think that the collection of that type of evidence is very rare. I think it's, you know, it's the gold flakes
you know, in the huge pan of mud when people pan for gold. You know what I mean? It's just, it's very rare. But
I totally agree.
You know, it's the it's the passing off of easily, you know. And when I say easily explained, you know, to me, you know, like the whole debunking thing, I'm really kind of getting away from. And you know, because if you search to debunk, I think that you have a goal in mind, and you put your mindset in that I'm going to prove something wrong. And then, you know, I think it would be easy to trick yourself into putting yourself into a place that you close yourself off to open possibility. So I think when you see a photo, for example, since it's where we're at, and you have a reasonably alternative explanation to the image of what you see, other than it being a spirit or a ghost or a demon, oh my, I think logically you can travel down the road to say the greater probability is that you have done this in your camera, or you've taken a picture of that, or a reflection, or, you know, don't point the lens towards the sun when you take a picture next time.
Right.
But it's only after when an expert, you know, and I think you and, you know, there's a guy that really helps out. He's a wonderful guy. His name's Kenny Biddle. He does a lot of photography assessments and evaluations. So I think you two would probably talk forever. You know, I think once you look at it and see a probability of something else, but when you can't, when you give it to experts and they're like, you know, I don't see it. I don't see something else here. I think that makes it very special. And
right. Like the famed black mass.
The famed black mass, yeah. You know.
That's a tough one.
Yeah. When you have something, I think it's special. And I think anybody has the ability to capture that one type of moment. And, you know, I don't think there's any type of skill set that you need to go out and collect data. You know, I don't think there's any inherent genetic code that gives somebody, you know, more prowess than somebody else, you know.
Right.
I think familiarizing yourself with the equipment that you're using is the capability. You know, anybody has that capability. It's just if people will do it or not is the question.
Right.
And, yeah.
I do it correctly.
And do it correctly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I kind of think I accidentally threw in a rant there, didn't I?
Yes, I think you did.
See, it just happened. It just happened. Well, Steve, thanks, man. I appreciate
it. No problem.
And the you know, what you talked about your mom, I know it was very.
Yeah, goodness, wow.
That's all right. Yeah, I appreciate sharing that.
I think I've shared that with you and the guys before. That
yeah,
yeah.
But I knew that was tough when you started to say that. I knew that was going to be tough. So.
Yeah, it's tough to get through. It's still after like almost 14 years. But, you know, it's something that stays with you, you know.
Yeah.
I also took a break that day, and Shelly, my wife, was with me, and we were over at Monticello and bought tickets, or were getting ready to buy tickets, and then something told me to go back to the hospital. And I'm glad we did, because I was there, you know,
right
when things happened.
Yeah.
And I'm glad I was. I really would have not liked myself very much if I wasn't there at the right time.
Mm-hmm.
So, but,
well,
it worked out, man.
Yes. Well, Steve, thank you again.
Yeah.
We'll get you on as a regular guest, and you'll have two of us throwing these tough questions at you. What do you think?
That sounds great.
That sounds great.
I need to write some questions down, actually. You guys are killing it there.
Well, I am going to say goodnight to everybody. Hope everybody has a great weekend. As always, feel free to email us with any questions. Feedback. We like feedback. If I talk too much, you know, feel free to tell me I talk too much, because I know I can. give us some corrective feedback. Tell us what you'd like to hear, if anything else. And if you enjoyed the show, tell us what you liked about the show, and we'll keep doing it. So, Steve, thanks again. I want to say thanks to Dr. Porterfield for coming on. Always smart fellow, always great critical thinker. And hopefully I can end this music correctly and not hang up on everybody. So, everybody have a good night. Good night.
Thank you for tuning into Paranormal Talk Radio. We broadcast live every Friday night at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time on Blog Talk Radio. Don't be intimidated by the hosts. We would love to get your feedback about our show, whether it is good or bad. You can leave comments on our Blog Talk webpage or email us privately at paranormaltalkradio@gmail.com. Would you like to interact with other listeners or the host during the show? Register free with Blog Talk Radio to chat with us live during the show. You can also look us up on Facebook, answer questions and polls, and get the latest news. Until next time, see you on the other side.